Detection devices. There are several types of devices and methods that can be used to identify bombs, including metal and vapor detectors, as well as X-ray machines. Several devices are portable and inexpensive enough for an individual to obtain. Particulate explosive detector detects modern plastic explosive constituents as well as TNT and nitroglycerin. Detects RDX used in C4, PE4, SX2, Semtex, Demex, and Detasheet. PETN used in certain military explosives and Semtex. Trinitrotoluene and NG nitroglycerin. Uses IMS, ion mobility spectroscopy, to detect micron-sized particles used in explosives. A sample size of 1 nanogram is sufficient for detection. To use, swipe the suspect material with a sample wipe or a cotton glove. Analysis time is approximately 3 seconds. A visual display contains a red warning light and an LCD giving a graphic display with a relative numerical scale of the target materials identified. An audible alarm can be triggered based on a user-defined threshold. Requires AC or battery, approximately 15 by 12 by 5 inches. Portable X-ray system. Uses a Polaroid radiographic film cassette and processor to create detailed radiographs of parcels and packages. Requires AC or a rechargeable battery. To use, simply point the lens at the suspect item and use the processor to view the image on the film. Spray bomb detector. This portable aerosol spray is used in conjunction with laminated test paper to detect explosives, both plastic and traditional TNT, on parcels and on hands and fingerprints. The test kit includes test paper and 2 spray cans E and X. First, rub the white paper over the desired surface, briefcase, suitcase, etc. Then spray with the E canister. If TNT is detected, the paper turns violet. If no reaction occurs, spray the paper with the X canister. The immediate appearance of pink indicates plastic explosives. X-spray can also be sprayed directly on paper and parcels. The procedure and results are identical. Bomb range detector. This detector of radio-controlled explosives is mounted in a car. The unit automatically scans and transmits on every radio frequency in a 1 kilometer radius. When a radio-controlled explosive is in the area, the device jams it to render it harmless. Be aware. All bomb experts stress that avoidance is the key concept when dealing with explosives. Your best chance of survival lies with the bomb squad, not with one of these devices. How to deliver a baby in a taxicab. Before you attempt to deliver a baby, use your best efforts to get to the hospital first. There really is no way to know exactly when the baby is ready to emerge, so even if you think you may not have time to get to the hospital, you probably do. Even the water breaking is not a sure sign that birth will happen immediately. The water is actually the amniotic fluid and the membrane that the baby floats in. Birth can occur many hours after the mother's water breaks. However, if you leave too late or get stuck in crosstown traffic and you must deliver the baby on your own, here are the basic concepts. 1. Time the uterine contraction. For first-time mothers, when contractions are about 3 to 5 minutes apart and last 40 to 90 seconds and increase in strength and frequency for at least an hour, the labor is most likely real and not false, though it can be. Babies basically deliver themselves, and they will not come out of the womb until they are ready. Have clean, dry towels, a clean shirt, or something similar on hand. 2. As the baby moves out of the womb, its head, the biggest part of its body, will open the cervix so the rest of it can pass through. As the baby moves through the birth canal and out of the mother's body, guide it out by supporting the head and then the body. 3. When the baby is out of the mother, dry it off and keep it warm. Do not slap its behind and try to make it cry. The baby will breathe on its own. If necessary, clear any fluid out of the baby's mouth with your fingers. 4. Tie off the umbilical cord. Take a piece of string, a shoelace works well, and tie off the cord several inches from the baby. 5. It is not necessary to cut the umbilical cord unless you are hours away from the hospital. In that event, you can safely cut the cord by tying it in another place a few inches closer to the mother and cutting it between the knots. Leave the cord alone until you get to the hospital. The piece of the cord attached to the baby will fall off by itself. The placenta will follow the baby in as few as 3 or as many as 30 minutes. If the feet come first. The most common complication during pregnancy is a breech baby, or one that is positioned so the feet and not the head will come out of the uterus first. Since the head is the larger part of the baby, the danger is that if the feet come out first, the cervix may not be dilated enough to get the head out afterwards. Today, most breech babies are delivered through cesarean sections, a surgical procedure that you will not be able to perform. If you have absolutely no alternatives, no hospital or doctors or midwives are available, when the baby begins to emerge, you can try to deliver the baby feet first. A breech birth does not necessarily mean that the head won't be able to get through the cervix. There is simply a higher possibility that this will occur. Deliver the baby as you would in a manner prescribed above. How to treat frostbite. Frostbite is a condition caused by the freezing of water molecules in skin cells and occurs in very cold temperatures. It is characterized by white, waxy skin that feels numb and hard. More severe cases result in a bluish-black skin color, and the most severe cases result in gangrene, which may lead to amputation. Affected areas are generally fingertips and toes, the nose, ears, and cheeks. Frostbite should be treated by a doctor. However, in an emergency, take the following steps. 1. Remove wet clothing and dress the area with warm, dry clothing. 2. Immerse frozen areas in warm water, 100 to 105 degrees Fahrenheit, or apply warm compresses for 10 to 30 minutes. 3. If warm water is not available, wrap gently in warm blankets. 4. Avoid direct heat, including electric or gas fires, heating pads, and hot water bottles. 5. Never thaw the area if it is at risk of refreezing. This can cause severe tissue damage. 6. Do not rub frostbitten skin or rub snow on it. 7. Take a pain reliever such as aspirin or ibuprofen during rewarming to lessen the pain. Rewarming will be accompanied by a severe burning sensation. There may be skin blistering and soft tissue swelling, and the skin may turn red, blue, or purple in color. When skin is pink and no longer numb, the area is thawed. 8. Apply sterile dressings to the affected area. Place the dressing between fingers or toes if they have been affected. Try not to disturb any blisters. Wrap rewarmed areas to prevent refreezing and have the patient keep thawed areas as still as possible. 9. Get medical treatment as soon as possible. How to treat frostnip. Frostnip is the early warning sign of frostbite. Frostnip is characterized by numbness and a pale coloring of the affected areas. It can be safely treated at home. 1. Remove wet clothing. 2. Immerse or soak affected areas in warm water, 100 to 105 degrees Fahrenheit. 3. Do not allow patient to control water temperature. Numb areas cannot feel heat and can be burned. 4. Continue treatment until the skin is pink and sensation returns. How to avoid frostbite and frostnip. Keep extremities warm and covered in cold weather. Use layered clothing and a face mask. Wear mittens instead of gloves and keep the ears covered. Take regular breaks from the cold whenever possible to warm extremities. How to treat a leg fracture. Most leg injuries are only sprains, but the treatment for both sprains and fractures is the same. 1. Skin is broken, do not touch or put anything on the wound. You must avoid infection. If the wound is bleeding severely, try to stop the flow of blood by applying steady pressure to the affected area with a sterile bandage or clean clothes. 2. Do not move the injured leg. You need to splint the wound to stabilize the injured area. 3. Find two stiff objects of the same length, wood, plastic, or folded cardboard for the splints. 4. Put the splints above and below the injured area, under the leg, or on the side if moving the leg is too painful. 5. Tie the splints with string, rope, or belts, whatever is available. Alternatively, use clothing torn into strips. Make sure the splint extends beyond the injured area. 6. Do not tie the splints too tightly. This may cut off circulation. You should be able to slip a finger under the rope or fabric. If the splinted area becomes pale or white, loosen the ties. 7. Have the injured person lie flat on their back. This helps blood continue to circulate and may prevent shock. Symptoms of a fracture, sprain, or dislocation. Difficult or limited movement, swelling, bruising of the affected area, severe pain, numbness, severe bleeding, a visible break of bone through the skin. What to avoid? Do not push at, probe, or attempt to clean an injury. This can cause infection. Do not move the injured person unless absolutely necessary. Treat the fracture and then go get help. If the person must be moved, be sure the injury is completely immobilized first. Do not elevate a leg injury. Do not attempt to move or reset a broken bone. This will cause severe pain and may complicate the injury. How to treat a bullet or knife wound. Do not immediately pull out an impaled object. Bullets, arrows, knives, sticks, and the like cause penetrating injuries. When these objects lodge in the vital areas of the body, the trunk, or near nerves or arteries, removing them can cause more severe bleeding that cannot be controlled. The object may be pressed against an artery or other vital internal structure and may actually be helping to reduce the bleeding. 2. Control the bleeding by using a combination of direct pressure, limb elevation, pressure points, and tourniquets, in that order. Direct pressure. You can control most bleeding by placing direct pressure on the wound. Attempt to apply pressure directly to bleeding surfaces. The scalp, for instance, bleeds profusely. Using your fingertips to press the edges of a scalp wound against the underlying bone is more effective than using the palm of your hand to apply pressure over a wider area. Use the tips of your fingers to control bleeding arterioles, small squirting vessels. Limb elevation. When a wound is in an extremity, elevation of the extremity above the heart, in addition to direct pressure, may reduce the bleeding further. Never make people who are in shock set up simply to elevate a bleeding wound. Pressure points. To reduce blood flow, you usually have to compress an artery, where you can feel the pulse, near the wound against an underlying bone. Just pressing into the soft belly of a muscle does not reduce blood flow by this mechanism. Tourniquets. A tourniquet is a wide band of cloth or a belt that is placed around an extremity and tightened, usually using a windlass, until the blood flow is cut off. The blood supply must be compressed against the long bone, the upper arm or upper leg. Since vessels between the double bones in the lower arm and lower leg will continue to bleed despite a tourniquet. The amount of pressure necessary typically causes additional vascular and nerve trauma that is permanent. A tourniquet should only be used as a last resort to save a life at the expense of sacrificing a limb. 3. Immobilize the injured area. Using splints and dressings to immobilize an injured area helps protect from further injury and maintain clots that have begun to form. Even if an injury to a bone or joint is not suspected, immobilization will promote clotting and help healing begin. 4. Dress the wound and strive to prevent infection. Use sterile or at least clean dressings as much as possible. Penetrating injuries may allow anaerobic, air-hating bacteria to get deep into the tissue. This is why penetrating wounds are typically irrigated with sterile or antibiotic solutions in surgery. While this is rarely practical outside of the hospital, it is important to remember that smaller penetrating wounds, nail holes in the foot and the like, should be encouraged to bleed for a short period to help wash out foreign material. Soaking an extremity in hydrogen peroxide may help kill anaerobic bacteria as well. Do not apply ointments or goo to penetrating wounds, as these may actually promote infection. Emergency tip. Some data indicate that pure granular sugar poured into a penetrating wound can decrease bleeding, promote clotting, and discourage bacteria. You are not likely to see it used in your local emergency department, but it might be worth consideration if your circumstances are dire. 5. Get medical attention as soon as possible. Be aware. It should be noted that tourniquets are rarely helpful. It is uncommon to have life-threatening bleeding in an extremity that cannot be controlled by the methods described above. The areas that cause fatal bleeding, like the femoral arteries or intra-abdominal bleeding, do not lend themselves to the use of a tourniquet. Even most complete amputations do not bleed all that much and are controlled by direct pressure. Arteries that are severed only part of the way through tend to bleed more profusely than those that are completely severed. Chapter 5. Adventure Survival. How to Land a Plane. These instructions cover small passenger planes and jets, not commercial airliners. 1. If the plane has only one set of controls, push, pull, carry, or drag the pilot out of the pilot's seat. 2. Take your place at the controls. 3. Put on your radio headset, if there is one. Use the radio to call for help. There will be a control button on the yoke, the plane's steering wheel, or a CB-like microphone on the instrument panel. Depress the button to talk, release to listen. Say, "Mayday, Mayday," and give your situation, destination, and plane call numbers, which should be printed on the top of the instrument panel. 4. If you get no response, try again on the emergency channel. Tune the radio to 121.5. All radios are different, but tuning is standard. The person on the other end should be able to talk you through the proper landing procedures. Follow their instructions carefully. If you cannot reach someone to talk you through the landing process, you will have to do it alone. 5. Get your bearings and identify the instruments. Look around you. Is the plane level? Unless you have just taken off or are about to land, it should be flying relatively straight. Yoke. This is the steering wheel and should be in front of you. It turns the plane and controls its pitch. Pull back on the column to bring the nose up. Push forward to point it down. Turn left to turn the plane left. Turn right to turn it right. The yoke is very sensitive. Move it only an inch or two in either direction to turn the plane in flight. While cruising, the nose of the plane should be about 3 inches below the horizon. Altimeter. This is the most important instrument, at least initially. It is the red dial in the middle of the instrument panel that indicates altitude. The small hand indicates feet above sea level in 1,000-foot increments, the large hand in hundreds. Heading. This is the compass and will be the only instrument with a small image of a plane in the center. The nose will point in the direction the plane is headed. Airspeed. This dial is on the top of the instrument panel and will be on the left. It is usually calibrated in knots, though it may also have miles per hour. A small plane travels at about 120 knots while cruising. Anything under 70 knots in the air is dangerously close to stall speed. A knot is 1.25 miles per hour. Throttle. This controls airspeed, power, and also the nose attitude, or its relation to the horizon. It is a lever between the seats and is always black. Pull it towards you to slow the plane and cause it to descend. Push it away to speed up the plane and cause it to ascend. The engine will get more or less quiet depending on the direction the throttle is moved. Fuel. The fuel gauges will be on the lower portion of the instrument panel. If the pilot has followed FAA regulations, the plane should have enough fuel for the amount of flying time to your intended destination, plus at least an additional half hour in reserve. Some planes have a reserve fuel tank in addition to the primary one, but do not worry about changing tanks. Flaps. Due to their complexity, wing flaps can make the plane harder to control. Use the throttle to control airspeed, not the flaps. 6. Begin the descent. Pull back on the throttle to slow down. Reduce power by about 1/4 of cruising speed. As the plane slows, the nose will drop. For descent, the nose should be about 4 inches below the horizon. 7. Deploy the landing gear. Determine if the plane has fixed or retractable landing gear. Fixed landing gear is always down, so you need do nothing. If it is retractable, there will be another lever between the seats near the throttle with a handle that is shaped like a tire. For a water landing, leave the landing gear up, retracted. 8. Look for a suitable landing site. If you cannot find an airport, find a flat field on which to land. A mile-long field is ideal, but finding a field of this length will be difficult unless you are in the Midwest. The plane can land on a much shorter strip of earth, so do not bother to look for the perfect landing site. There is no such thing. Bumpy terrain will also do if your options are limited. 9. Line up the landing strip so that when the altimeter reads 1,000 feet, the field is off the right wingtip. In an ideal situation, you should take a single pass over the field to look for obstructions. With plenty of fuel, you may want to do so. Fly over the field, make a big rectangle, and approach a second time. 10. When approaching the landing strip, reduce power by pulling back on the throttle. Do not let the nose drop more than 6 inches below the horizon. 11. The plane should be 100 feet off the ground when you are just above the landing strip, and the rear wheels should touch first. The plane will stall at 55 to 65 miles per hour, and you want the plane to be at just about stall speed when the wheels touch the ground. 12. Pull all the way back on the throttle and make sure the nose of the plane does not dip too steeply. Gently pull back on the yoke as the plane slowly touches the ground. 13. Using the pedals on the floor, steer and brake the plane as needed. The yoke has very little effect on the ground. The upper pedals are the brakes. The lower pedals control the direction of the nose wheel. Concentrate first on the lower pedals. Press the right pedal to move the plane right. Press the left pedal to move it left. Upon landing, be aware of your speed. A modest reduction of speed will increase your chances of survival exponentially by reducing your ground speed from 120 to 70 miles per hour. You increase your chances of survival threefold. Be aware, a well-executed emergency landing in bad terrain can be less hazardous than an uncontrolled landing in an established field. If the plane is headed towards trees, steer it between them so the wings absorb the impact if you hit. When the plane comes to a stop, get out as soon as possible and get away, and take the pilot with you. How to survive an earthquake. 1. If you are indoors, stay there. Get under a desk or table and hang on to it, or move into a doorway. The next best place is in a hallway or against an inside wall. Stay clear of windows, fireplaces, or heavy furniture or appliances. Get out of the kitchen, which is a dangerous place. Do not run downstairs or rush outside while the building is shaking or while there is a danger of falling and hurting yourself or by being hit by falling glass or debris. 2. If you are outside, get into the open, away from the buildings, the power lines, chimneys, or anything else that might fall on you. 3. If you are driving, stop, but carefully. Move your car as far out of traffic as possible. Do not stop on or under a bridge or overpass or under trees, light posts, power lines, or signs. Stay inside your car until the shaking stops. When you resume driving, watch for breaks in the pavement, fallen rocks, and bumps in the road at bridge approaches. 4. If you are in a mountainside area, watch out for falling rocks, landslides, trees, and other debris that could be loosened by quakes. 5. After the quake stops, check for injuries and apply the necessary first aid or seek help. Do not attempt to move seriously injured persons unless they are in further danger of injury. Cover them with blankets and seek medical help for serious injuries. 6. If you can, put on a pair of sturdy, thick-soled shoes in case you step on broken glass, debris, etc. 7. Check for hazards. Put out fires in your home or neighborhood immediately. Gas leaks, shut off main gas valve only if you suspect a leak because of broken pipes or odor. Do not use matches, lighters, camp stoves, or barbecues, electrical equipment, or appliances until you are sure there are no gas leaks. They may create a spark that could ignite leaking gas and cause an explosion and fire. Do not turn on the gas again if you turned it off. Let the gas company do it. Damaged electrical wiring. Shut off power at the control box if there is any danger to house wiring. Downed or damaged utility lines. Do not touch down power lines or any objects in contact with them. Spills. Clean up any spilled medicines, drugs, or other harmful materials such as bleach, lye, or gas. Downed or damaged chimneys. Approach with caution and do not use a damaged chimney. It could start a fire or let poisonous gases into your house. Fallen items. Beware of items tumbling off of shelves when you open closet and cupboard doors. 8. Check food and water supplies. Do not eat or drink anything from open containers near shattered glass. If the power is off, plan meals to use up frozen foods or foods that will spoil quickly. Food in the freezer should be good for at least a couple of days. If the water is off, you can drink from water heaters, melted ice cubes, or canned vegetables. Avoid drinking water from swimming pools and spas. 9. Be prepared for aftershocks. Another quake, larger or smaller, may follow. Be aware. Use your telephone only for a medical or fire emergency. You could tie up the lines needed for emergency response. If the phone doesn't work, send someone for help. Do not expect firefighters, police, or paramedics to help you immediately. They may not be available. How to prepare. Being prepared for an earthquake is the best way to survive one. Make sure each member of the household knows what to do no matter where they are when a quake occurs. Establish a meeting place where you can reunite afterwards. Find out about earthquake plans developed by your children's school or daycare. Transportation may be disrupted, so keep emergency supplies, food, liquids, and comfortable shoes, for example, at work. Know where your gas, electric, and water main shutoffs are and how to turn them off if there's a leak or electrical short. Make sure older members of the family can shut off utilities. Locate your nearest fire and police stations and emergency medical facility. Talk to your neighbors. You can help one another during and after an earthquake. Take Red Cross first aid and CPR training courses. How to survive adrift at sea. 1. Stay aboard your boat as long as possible before you get into a life raft. In a maritime emergency, the rule of thumb is that you should step up into your raft, meaning you should be up to your waist in water before you get into the raft. Your best chance of survival is on a boat, even a disabled one, not in a life raft. If the boat is sinking, know how to use a life raft. Any craft that sails in open water, a boat larger than 14 feet, should have at least one life raft. Smaller boats may only have life jackets, so these vessels should stay within easy swimming distance of land. 2. Get in your life raft and take whatever supplies you can carry. Most importantly, if you have water in jugs, take it with you. Do not drink seawater. A person can last for several days without food at sea, but without clean water to drink, death is a virtual certainty within several days. If worse comes to worse, throw the jugs of water overboard so that you can get them later. They will float. Many canned foods, particularly vegetables, are packed in water, so take those with you if you can. Do not ration water. Drink it as needed, but don't drink more than necessary. A half gallon a day should be sufficient if you limit your activity. 3. If you are in a cold water or weather environment, get warm. You are more likely to die of exposure or hypothermia than of anything else. Put on dry clothes, stay out of the water. Prolonged exposure to salt water can damage your skin and cause lesions, which are prone to infection. Stay covered. Modern life rafts have canopies, which protect passengers from sun, wind, and rain. If the canopy is missing or damaged, wear a hat, long sleeves, and pants to protect yourself from the sun. 4. Find food if you can. Life rafts include fishing hooks in their survival kits. If your raft is floating for several weeks, seaweed will form on its underside and fish will naturally congregate in the shade under you. You can catch them with a hook and eat the flesh raw. If no hook is available, you can fashion one using wire or even shards of aluminum from an empty can. 5. Try to get to land if you know where it is. Most rafts include small paddles, but life rafts are not very maneuverable, especially in any wind above 3 knots. Do not exhaust yourself. You will not be able to move any significant distance without great effect. 6. If you see a plane or a boat nearby, try to signal them. Use a VHF radio or handheld flare kit to get their attention. A small mirror can also be used for signaling. Objects you can use to signal for help. Watch. Glasses. Aluminum can. Compass. Aluminum foil. How to prepare. Never go out on a boat unprepared. Most boats should have at least one type of emergency signaling device, which is called an Emergency Position Radio Beacon, or EPIRB. These devices send out global marine distress signals and come in two forms, 406 MHz or 125 MHz. Both will send your boat identification and position, but the 406 goes to other ships, passing airplanes, and satellites, while the 125 only goes to ships and planes. People without one of these devices can drift for months before they are found. Always carry a go bag that contains warm, dry clothes and blankets, a hat, food, canned goods, backpacking foods, dried fruit, a handheld VHF radio, a small handheld GPS global positioning satellite tracking unit, drinking water in portable jugs, a compass, a flashlight with extra batteries, handheld flares, a handheld water maker. How to survive when lost in the desert. 1. Do not panic, especially if people know where you are and when you are scheduled to return. If you have a vehicle, stay with it. Do not wander. 2. If you are on foot, try to backtrack by retracing your steps. Always move downstream or down country. Travel along ridges instead of in washes or valleys where it is harder for you to see and for rescuers to see you. 3. If you have completely lost your bearings, try to get to a high vista and look around. If you are not absolutely sure you can follow your tracks or prints, stay put. 4. Build smoky fires during daylight hours. Tires work well, but keep a bright fire burning at night. If fuel is limited, keep a small kindling fire burning and have fuel ready to burn if you spot a person or vehicle. 5. If a car or plane is passing, or if you see other people off in the distance, try to signal them with one of the following methods. In a clearing, you can use a newspaper or aluminum foil weighed down with rocks to make a large triangle. This is the international distress symbol. A large eye indicates to rescuers that someone is injured. An X means you are unable to proceed. An F indicates you need food and water. 3 shots from a gun is another recognized distress signal. 6. To avoid heat prostration, rest frequently. Deserts in the United States can reach temperatures upwards of 120 degrees during the day, and shade can be scarce. In the summer, sit at least 12 inches above the ground on a stool or a branch. Ground temperatures can be 30 degrees hotter than the surrounding air temperature. When walking during daylight hours, walk slowly to conserve energy and rest at least 10 minutes every hour. Drink water. Don't ration it. Avoid talking and smoking. Breathe through your nose, not your mouth. Avoid alcohol, which dehydrates. Avoid eating if there is not a sufficient amount of water readily available. Digestion consumes water. Stay in the shade and wear clothing, including a shirt, hat, and sunglasses. Clothing helps ration sweat by slowing evaporation and prolonging cooling. Travel in the evening, at night, or early in the day. In cold weather, wear layers of clothing and make sure you and your clothes are dry. Watch for signs of hypothermia, which include intense shivering, muscle tensing, fatigue, poor coordination, stumbling, and blueness of the lips and fingernails. If you see these signs, get dry clothing on immediately and light a fire if possible. If not, huddle close to companions for warmth. 7. Try to find water. The best places to look are the base of rock cliffs, in the gravel wash from mountain valleys, especially after a recent rain, the outside edge of a sharp bend in a dry stream bed. Look for wet sand, then dig down 3 to 6 feet to find seeping water. Near green vegetation, tree clusters, and other shrubbery such as cottonwood, sycamore, or willow trees may indicate the presence of water. Animal paths and flocks of birds. Following them may lead you to water. 8. Find cactus fruit and flowers. Split open the base of cactus stalks and chew on the pith, but don't swallow it. Carry chunks of pith to alleviate thirst while walking. Other desert plants are inedible and will make you sick. How to prepare. When planning a trip to a desert area that is sparsely populated, always inform someone of your destination, the duration of your trip, and its intended route. Leaving without alerting anyone and getting lost means no one will be looking for you. If traveling by car, make sure your vehicle is in good condition and make sure you have a sound battery, good hoses, squeeze them, they should be firm, not soft and mushy. A spare tire with the proper inflation, spare fan belts, tools, reserve gasoline and oil, water, 5 gallons for a vehicle. How to drive safely. Keep an eye on the sky. Flash floods can occur in a wash anytime thunderheads are in sight, even though it may not be raining where you are. If you get caught in a dust storm while driving, get off the road immediately. Turn off your driving lights and turn on your emergency flashers. Back into the wind to reduce windshield pitting by sand particles. Before driving through washes and sandy areas, test the footing. 1 minute on foot may save hours of hard work and prevent a punctured oil pan. If your vehicle breaks down, stay near it. Your emergency supplies are there. Raise the hood and trunk lid to denote help needed. A vehicle can be seen for miles, but a person is very difficult to find. Leave a disabled vehicle only if you are positive of the route to help. If stalled or lost, set signal fires. Set smoky fires in the daytime, bright ones for the night. 3 fires in a triangle denotes help needed. If you find a road, stay on it. What to bring when traveling by foot? Water. 1 gallon per person per day is adequate. 2 or more gallons is smarter and safer. A map that shows the nearest populated areas. Waterproof matches. A cigarette lighter or flint and steel. A survival guide. Strong sunscreen, a hat, warm clothes, and blankets. A pocket knife. A metal signaling mirror. Iodine tablets. A small pencil and writing materials. A whistle. 3 blasts denotes help needed. A canteen cup. Aluminum foil. A compass. A first aid kit. How to avoid getting lost. When hiking, periodically look back in the direction from where you have come. Taking a mental picture of what it will look like when you return helps in case you become lost. Stay on established trails if possible, and mark the trail routes with blazes on trees and brush, or by making ducks, which are piles of 3 rocks stacked on top of one another. How to survive if your parachute fails to open. 1. As soon as you realize that your chute is bad, signal to a jumping companion whose chute has not yet opened that you are having a malfunction. Wave your arms and point to your chute. 2. When your companion and your new best friend gets to you, hook arms. 3. Once you are hooked together, the two of you will still be falling at terminal velocity, or about 130 miles per hour. When your friend opens his chute, there will be no way either of you will be able to hold on to one another normally, because the G-forces will triple or quadruple your body weight. To prepare for this problem, hook your arms into his chest strap or through 2 sides of the front of his harness, all the way up to your elbows, and grab hold of your own strap. 4. Open the chute. The chute opening shock will be severe, probably enough to dislocate or break your arms. 5. Steer the canopy. Your friend must now hold on to you with one arm while steering his canopy, the part of the chute that controls direction and speed. If your friend's canopy is slow and big, you may hit the grass or dirt slowly enough to break only a leg, and your chances of survival are high. If this canopy is a fast one, however, your friend will have to steer to avoid hitting the ground too fast. You must also avoid power lines and other obstructions at all costs. 6. If there is a body of water nearby, head for that. Of course, once you hit the water, you will have to tread with just your legs and hope that your partner is able to pull you out before your chute takes in water. How to prepare. Check your chute before you jump. The good news is that today's parachutes are built to open, so even if you make big mistakes packing them, they tend to sort themselves out. The reserve chute, however, must be packed by a certified rigger and must be perfect, as it is your last resort. Make sure that the parachute is folded in straight lines, that there are no twists. The slider is positioned correctly to keep the parachute from opening too fast. How to survive an avalanche. 1. Struggle to stay on top of the snow by using a freestyle swimming motion. 2. If you are buried, your best chance of survival is if someone saw you get covered. The snow in an avalanche is like a wet snowball. It is not light and powdery, and once you are buried, it is very difficult to dig your way out. 3. If you are only partially buried, you can dig your way out with your hands or by kicking at the snow. If you still have a ski pole, poke through the snow in several directions until you see or feel open air, then dig in that direction. 4. If you are completely buried, chances are you will be too injured to help yourself. However, if you are able, Dig a small hole around you and spit in it. The saliva should head downhill, giving you an idea of which direction is up. Dig up and do it quickly. Be aware. Never go hiking or skiing alone in avalanche territory. Carry an avalanche probe, a sturdy sectional aluminum pole that fits together to create a probe 6 to 8 feet in length. Some ski poles are threaded and can be screwed together to form avalanche probes. Know where and when avalanches are likely to occur. Avalanches occur in areas with new snow, on the non-leeward side of mountains. The leeward side is the side facing the wind, and in the afternoons of sunny days, when the morning sun may have loosened the snowpack. They occur most often on mountainsides with angles of 30 to 45 degrees. These are often the most popular slopes for skiing. Avalanches can be triggered by numerous factors, including recent snowfall, wind, and sunlight. As new snow accumulates with successive storms, the layers may be different consistencies and not bond to one another, making the snow highly unstable. Loud noises do not cause avalanches, except if they cause significant vibrations in the ground or snow. The activity with the highest avalanche risk is now snowmobiling. Snowmobiles, sometimes called mountain sleds, are powerful and light and can get high into mountainous terrain where avalanches occur. Carry a beacon. The beacon broadcasts your position by setting up a magnetic field that can be picked up by other beacons in your group. If skiing on a dangerous slope, go down one at a time, not as a group, in case a slide occurs. How to rescue others. If you have witnessed others being buried in an avalanche, contact the ski patrol as soon as possible. Then search first by trees and benches, the places where people are most commonly buried. All searchers should have small, collapsible shovels to help them dig quickly if they find someone. How to survive if you are in the line of gunfire. If you are the primary target, 1. Get as far away as possible. An untrained shooter isn't likely to be accurate at any distance greater than 60 feet. 2. Run fast, but do not move in a straight line. Weave back and forth to make it more difficult for the shooter to draw a bead on you. The average shooter will not have the training necessary to hit a moving target at any real distance. 3. Do not bother to count shots. You will have no idea if the shooter has more ammunition. Counting is only for the movies. 4. Turn a corner as quickly as you can, particularly if your pursuer has a rifle or assault weapon. Rifles have much greater accuracy and range, and the person may be more likely to either aim or spray bullets in your direction. Attempt to keep large objects between you and the shooter. If you are not the primary target, 1. Get down and stay down. If the intended target is near you, or if the shooter is firing at random, get as low as possible. Do not crouch down, get flat on your stomach and stay there. 2. If you are outside and can get to a car, run to it and lie behind a tire on the opposite side of the car from the shooter. If no cars are present, lie in the gutter next to the curb. A car will stop or deflect a small caliber bullet fired towards you. However, higher caliber bullets, such as those from an assault rifle, or bullets that are designed to pierce armor, can easily penetrate a car and hit someone on the opposite side. 3. If you are inside a building and the shooter is inside, get to another room and lie flat. If you cannot get to another room, move behind any heavy, thick object, solid desk, filing cabinets, tables, a couch, for protection. 4. If you are face to face with the shooter, do anything you can to make yourself less of a target. Turn sideways and stay low. Stray bullets are likely to be at least a few feet above the ground. If the shooter is outside, stay inside and stay away from the doors and windows. 5. Stay down until the shooting stops or until authorities arrive and give the all clear. How to survive when lost in the mountains. The number one cause of death when lost in the mountains is hypothermia. Humans are basically tropical animals. Staying calm in the face of darkness, loneliness, and the unknown will greatly increase your chances of survival. 80% of mountain survival is your reaction to fear. 10% is your survival gear, and the other 10% is knowing how to use it. Always tell someone else where you are going and when you will return. 1. Do not panic. If you told someone where you are going, search and rescue teams will be looking for you. In general, teams will search only during daylight hours for adults, but will search around the clock for children who are alone. 2. Find shelter and stay warm and dry. Exerting yourself unnecessarily, like dragging heavy logs to build a shelter, will make you sweat and make you cold. Use the shelter around you before trying to construct one. If you are in a snow-covered area, you may be able to dig a cave in deep snow for shelter and protection from the wind. A snow trench may be a better idea. It requires less exertion. Simply use something to dig a trench, get in it, and cover it with branches or leaves. You should attempt to make your shelter in the middle of the mountain if possible. Stay out of the valleys. Cold air falls and the valley floor can be the coldest spot on the mountain. 3. Signal rescuers for help. The best time to signal rescuers is during the day. With a signaling device or 3 fires in a triangle, signal for help from the highest point possible. It will be easier for rescues to see you, and any sound you make will travel further. Build 3 smoky fires and put your blanket, goal side facing out, if it is a space blanket, on the ground. 4. Do not wander far. It will make finding you more difficult, as search teams will be trying to retrace your path and may miss you if you have gone off in a different direction. Searchers often wind up finding a vehicle with no one in it because the driver has wandered off. 5. If you get frostbite, do not rewarm the affected area until you're out of danger. You can walk on frostbitten feet, but once you warm the area, you can feel the pain, and you will not want to walk anywhere. Try to protect the frostbitten area and keep it dry until you are rescued. How to prepare. You must dress properly before entering a wilderness area. Layer your clothing in the following manner. First, inner layer. Long underwear, preferably polypropylene. This provides only slight insulation. Its purpose is to draw moisture off the skin. Second, middle layer. Something to trap and create warm, dead air space, such as a down parka. Third, outer layer, a Gore-Tex or other brand of breathable jacket that allows moisture out but not in. Dry insulation is key to survival. Once you are wet, it is very difficult to get dry. Make sure you have the following items in your survival kit and that you know how to use them. Reading the instructions for the first time in the dark wilderness is not recommended. A heat source. Bring several boxes of waterproof matches, as well as a lighter. Trioxane, a small light chemical heat source that the Army uses, is recommended. Trioxane packs can be picked up in an outdoor and military surplus store. Dryer lint is also highly flammable and very lightweight. Shelter. Carry a small space blanket, which has a foil-like coating that insulates you. Get one that is silver on one side for warmth and orange-gold on the other, which can be used for signaling. The silver side is not a good color to signal with. It can be mistaken for ice or mineral rock. The orange-gold color does not occur in nature and will not be mistaken for anything else. A signaling device. A small mirror works well, as do flares or a whistle, which carries much farther than a voice. Food. Pack carbohydrates, bagels, trail mix, granola bars, and so on. Proteins need heat to break down and require more water for digestion. How to make fire without matches. What you will need. Knife, kindling, several pieces varying in size from small to large. Wood to keep the fire going. Select dead wood from the tree, not off the ground. Good wood should indent with pressure from a fingernail, but not break easily. Bow, a curved stick about 2 feet long. String, a shoelace, parachute cord, or leather thong. Primitive cordage can be made from yucca, milkweed, or another tough, stringy plant. Socket, a horn, bone, piece of hard wood, rock, or seashells that fit in the palm of the hand and will be placed over a stick. Lube. You can use earwax, skin oil, a ball of green grass, lip balm, or anything else oily. Spindle. A dry, straight, 3/4 to 1 inch diameter stick, approximately 12 to 18 inches long. Round one end and carve the other end to a point. Fireboard. Select and shape a second piece of wood into a board approximately 3/4 to 1 inch thick, 2 to 3 inches wide, and 10 to 12 inches long. Carve a shallow dish in the center of the flat side approximately 1/2 inch from the edge. Into the edge of this dish, cut a V-shaped notch. Tray. A piece of bark or leaf inserted under the V-shaped notch to catch the ember. The tray should not be made of deadwood. Nest. Dry bark, grass, leaves, cattail fuzz, or some other combustible material formed into a bird nest shape. How to start the fire. 1. Tie the string tightly to the bow, one end to each end of the stick. 2. Kneel on your right knee with the ball of your left foot on the fireboard, holding it firmly to the ground. 3. Take the bow in your hands. 4. Loop the string in the center of the bow. 5. Insert the spindle in the loop of the bowstring so that the spindle is on the outside of the bow, pointed end up. The bowstring should now be tight. If not, loop the string around the spindle a few more times. 6. Take the hand socket in your left hand, notch side down, and lubricate the notch. 7. Place the rounded end of the spindle into the dish of the fireboard and the pointed end of the spindle into the hand socket. 8. Pressing down lightly on the socket, draw the bow back and forth, rotating the spindle slowly. 9. Add pressure to the socket and speed to your bowing until you begin to produce smoke and ash. When there's a lot of smoke, you have created a fire ember. 10. Immediately stop your bowing motion and tap the spindle on the fireboard to knock the ember into the tray. 11. Remove the tray and transfer the ember into your nest. 12. Hold the nest tightly and blow steadily onto the ember. Eventually, the nest will catch fire. 13. Add kindling onto the nest. When the kindling catches, gradually add larger pieces of fuel. Be aware, you should not be dependent on any primitive fire method to maintain life in a wilderness survival emergency. Making fire in this manner can be quite difficult under actual harsh conditions, rain, snow, cold. You should practice this method at home before you attempt it in the wilderness to familiarize yourself with the quirks of the process. How to avoid being struck by lightning. Lightning causes more casualties annually in the United States than any other storm-related phenomenon except floods. No place is completely safe from lightning. However, some places are more dangerous than others. 1. Loud or frequent thunder indicates that lightning activity is approaching. If you can see lightning and/or heat thunder, you are at risk. High winds, rainfall, and cloud cover often act as precursors to actual cloud-to-ground strikes. Thunderstorms generally move west to east and occur late in the day or in early evening when humidity is highest. 2. When you see lightning, count the number of seconds until thunder is heard and then divide by 5. This will indicate how far the storm is from you in miles. Sound travels at 1,100 feet per second. 3. If the time delay between seeing the flash, lightning, and hearing the boom, thunder, is fewer than 30 seconds, seek a safer location immediately. Avoid high places, open fields, and ridges above the timberline. If in an open area, do not lie flat. Kneel with your hands on the ground and your head low. If you are on a technical climb, sit on a rock or on non-metallic equipment. Tie a rope around your ankle. This will anchor you if a strike occurs and you are knocked off balance. Avoid isolated trees, unprotected gazebos, and rain or picnic shelters, as well as shallow depressions in the earth. Current traveling through the ground may use you to bridge the depression. Avoid baseball dugouts, communication towers, flagpoles, light poles, metal and wood bleachers, and metal fences. If you are camping, avoid your tent if it is in an open area or under a large tree. Avoid golf carts and convertibles. Avoid bodies of water, oceans, lakes, swimming pools, and rivers. 4. Wait for the storm to pass. The lightning threat generally diminishes with time after the last sound of thunder, but may persist for more than 30 minutes. When thunderstorms are in the area but not overhead, the lightning threat can exist even when it is sunny, not raining, or when clear sky is visible. Be aware. Large enclosed buildings tend to be much safer than smaller or open structures. The risk for lightning injury depends on whether the structure incorporates lightning protection, the construction materials used, and the size of the structure. Fully enclosed metal vehicles such as cars, trucks, buses, vans, and fully enclosed farm vehicles with the windows rolled up provide good shelter from lightning. Avoid contact with metal or conductive surfaces outside or inside the vehicle. When inside, avoid contact with conductive surfaces with exposure to the outside, including the shower, sink, plumbing fixtures, and metal door and window frames. Avoid outlets, electrical cords, and wired electrical devices, including telephones, computers, and televisions, particularly cable TVs. How to treat someone struck by lightning. 1. Call 911 to report the strike and give directions to emergency personnel. With immediate medical treatment, victims can survive an encounter with lightning. If multiple people have been struck, Treat the apparent dead first. People who are unconscious but still breathing will probably recover on their own. 2. Move to a safer location to avoid getting struck yourself. It is unusual for victims who survive a lightning strike to have major fractures that would cause paralysis or major bleeding complications unless they have suffered a fall or been thrown a distance. Do not be afraid to move the victim rapidly if necessary. Individuals struck by lightning do not carry a charge, and it is safe to touch them to give medical treatment. 3. In cold and wet environments, put a protective layer between the victim and the ground to decrease the chance of hypothermia, which can further complicate resuscitation. Check for burns, especially around jewelry and watches. 4. If the victim is not breathing, start mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Give one breath every 5 seconds. If moving the victim, give a few quick breaths prior to moving. 5. Determine if the victim has a pulse. Check the pulse at the carotid artery, side of the neck, or the femoral arteries, groin, for at least 20 to 30 seconds. 6. If no pulse is detected, start cardiac compressions. 7. If the pulse returns, continue ventilation with rescue breathing as needed for as long as practical in a wilderness situation. 8. If a pulse does not return after 20 to 30 minutes of good effort, stop resuscitation efforts. In wilderness areas far from medical care, prolonged basic CPR is of little use. The victim is unlikely to recover if they do not respond within the first few minutes. How to get to the surface if your scuba tank runs out of air? 1. Do not panic. 2. Signal to your fellow divers that you are having a problem. Point to your tank or regulator. 3. If someone comes to your aid, share the regulator, passing it back and forth while swimming slowly to the surface. Take 2 breaths, then pass it back to the other diver. Ascend together, exhaling as you go. Then take another 2 breaths, alternating until you reach the surface. Nearly all divers carry an extra regulator connected to their tank. 4. If no one can help you, keep your regulator in your mouth. Air may expand in the tank as you ascend, giving you additional breaths. 5. Look straight up so that your airway is as straight as possible. 6. Swim to the surface at a slow to moderate rate. Exhale continuously as you swim up. It is very important that you exhale the entire way up, but the rate at which you exhale is also important. Exhale slowly. Do not exhaust all your air in the first few seconds of your ascent. As long as you are even slightly exhaling, your passageway will be open and air can vent from your lungs. Warning: if you do not exhale continuously, you risk an aneurysm. Be aware: never dive alone. Watch your pressure and depth gauges closely. Make sure your fellow divers are within easy signaling swimming distance. Share a regulator in an emergency. It is much safer to use your partner's regulator than to try to make a quick swim to the surface. This is especially true the deeper you are, where you need to surface gradually. Always use an alternate air source instead of swimming up unless you are fewer than 30 feet below the surface. About the authors. Joshua Piven is a computer journalist and freelance writer and a former editor at Ziff Davis Publishing. He has been chased by knife-wielding motorcycle bandits, stuck in subway tunnels, been robbed and mugged, and had to break down doors and pick locks. And his computer crashes regularly. This is his first book. He currently makes his home in Philadelphia. David Borgonick is a writer and editor who has written several nonfiction books, including The Little Book of Stupid Questions, Hysteria, 1999, The Jewish Mother Goose, Running Press, 2000. He has ridden in heavily armored vehicles in Pakistan, stowed away on Amtrak, been conned by a grifter, broken into several houses, each for a good reason, and has borrowed mini bottles from the drink cart on Delta. He lives in Philadelphia with his wife, his best case scenario. Check out www.worstcasescenarios.com for additional survival tips, updates, and more. Because you just never know. We hope you enjoyed listening to The Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook by Joshua Piven and David Borgonick, read by Burt Reynolds and produced by Elisa Weberman and Alfred Martino. This has been a Listen and Live audio production. To receive a complete catalog of other fine audiobooks, please call 1-800-653-9400 or visit our website at www.listenandlive.com. If you enjoyed this audiobook, don't miss our latest release, The Darwin Awards.